Welcome to the Taylor Report. It is CIUT 89.5 FM, and our guest is Stephen Gowans of What's Left. How are you doing there, Stephen?
I'm doing well, Phil.
It's very
Thank
nice.
You.
It's good to be talking to you. I'm glad you're you have a tweet account. I hope it lasts. it's subject to the it turns out arbitrary decision by a man who is kind of a primitive looking character. I was surprised. It turns out, you know, when you find the people who really have power, it always shocks you. I want to ask you your reactions as someone who has studies societies and class struggle and revolutionary movements. You must have been rather impressed that the U.S. government could be on the brink of being overthrown by a half-naked man with horns on his head who says he's an alien. How did this come to be called sedition and insurrection and a coup? Tell us what a coup is. Was that a coup? What was going on in Washington?
Well, I don't think it was a coup. Even if it was an attempted one, it certainly was far from successful. But in all of this, you know, what's struck me about Trump and the reason why many people within the U.S. establishment have take exception to Trump's approach is because he's turned the methods that the U.S. government has used abroad to interfere in the affairs of other countries, and he's used those or turned them against the United States. I wouldn't compare Trump to Hitler in very many respects, but I mean, it was said that one of the grievances that the West really had about Hitler was that he turned the methods that Western colonialism had used against much of the world against Europe itself, and that was his great sin or great crime. And in the same respect, I think that what Trump does is he's often turned the same methods that the United States has used, as I said, to intervene in the affairs of other countries against the US. So for example, it's been standard practice by US governments to intervene in the affairs of countries which have parliamentary elections or some kind of parliamentary parliamentary systems, which seem likely in an impending election to bring to power or to bring to power once again some leader or force that the United States is opposed to talk about the election or the upcoming election as being fraudulent right from the beginning or as a stolen election. And to use that claim to mobilize forces on the street to do things like storm the legislature, an attempt to bring down the government or at least to discredit it. So what Trump was doing is really reminiscent of what we've seen the United States do in a number of other countries. Mm-hmm. And you could go through the list, but.
Well, you know what, let me ask you about how tangled this story is becoming. The United States establishment has been very excited about and supportive of Hong Kong demonstrators. And when they decided to go into the legislature of Hong Kong and beat everything to pieces and paint it all up, and they were, a lot of them, I guess it seems to have been the majority, are Trump people, right? Including the billionaire Jimmy Lai, who seems to be bankrolling. He seems to be in a bind at the moment because he's been arrested in Hong Kong, but he gave something like $2 million to Donald Trump's campaign. So it's almost like they can't, I don't know that they want to hear these topics raised, right? Pelosi said it was a beautiful thing that they would smash up.
Yes.
The legislature of Hong Kong.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, I know. So what we have is the same means being used or turned against the U.S. society and a great objection to it. But now, always, I mean.
Yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry I cut you off there. We're speaking, by the way, to Stephen Gowans. The site is called What's Left, and Stephen also has a Twitter account. I urge you to go there, particularly now, because it's a very important document and posted there. But before we leave the subject of the election, you also posted a very, very nice comment from a famous 19th century revolutionary, Frederick Engels, talking about the American political system, and he says it is run by two political gangs. And he also used the word cartels. And he says the American people are helpless to deal with those two gangs. Well, now we have an incoming bright face. He looks rather familiar to me, but everybody seems to treat him like he's going to be the new dawn. And Trump has been such an ugly apparition that people actually seem to think very dramatic changes are about to happen. I gather from reading your essays over the years that you would think that's not the case. And that's probably why you cited Frederick Engels. You want to talk about that?
Yeah, well, you could go on for hours about that at so many levels. But I think here's an example just for something that happened yesterday that kind of illustrates that we shouldn't expect any change. In Foreign Affairs, which is often considered the unofficial journal of the US State Department, there was an article, I think yesterday, published by James Jeffrey, who was the US, who was taking the lead for the US State Department in Syria. And Jeffrey said that the Trump administration's policy in Syria and the Middle East was simply a continuation of the policy of previous administrations, including the Obama administration. And then he went on to outline the similarities and the continuity. And I think that you could make that argument right down the line, whether you want to talk about Syria or Iran or China or Russia or whatever. I mean, there are continuities. Perhaps from one administration to the next, there might be some changes or differences in the way in which they pursue the same goals, but the goals are always the same. And we wouldn't know either whether the methods they use might be similar, because methods can shift with shifting circumstances. So it could be that the Obama administration may have used many of the same methods that the Trump administration used, responding to the way in which rivals behave, the way in which circumstances change. But there is a continuity because, as you were pointing out in the Engels comment, both parties are instruments of what we could call the US ruling class, or what you might call the US economic elite. I mean, they have considerable sway over both parties, and those parties represent the interests of those people who own and control the US economy. Yes. And they do so, and the policies they formulated are intended to continue the privileges and the profit-making opportunities of that, you know, mm-hmm. sectoral part of the U.S. population, that very small part, which was called, what, about a decade ago, the 1%, which is probably actually 1/10 of 1%.
Mm-hmm. It is striking. When I read what the reactions of various political movements and whatnot, then the number of people who want to leap to protecting Biden and Pelosi from the terrible right. And I read people saying, well, you know, look for the money. There's some of these guys who are staging that demonstration, they're being financed. And you can almost hear the echo of, you know, we're supposed to see Germany 1922 or something. And all the time that they're saying that, they don't mention that there's a little bit of money going into the Biden coffers. as a matter of fact, a little bit more than Trump has, actually. When it, I mean, it's in terms of establishment money, am I right?
Oh, of course, quite a lot, which kind of brings to mind an anecdote about Obama. When Obama was first elected and everyone was excited about him and rhapsodizing about him, at the time, my son, I believe, was in grade 9 or 10. And CBC decided to do a news report on Obama's election and how Canadians regarded it. And they managed to go into the high school my son was attending. And a few students were selected to be interviewed by the CBC on what they thought about Obama's election. And they all were there talking about how excited they were, how filled with hope they were. And then they came to my son and he said, well, you know, I'm not really that excited or filled with hope because look at who it is that's provided the funding to the Obama campaign. Look who he's beholding to. Which was the right thing to say and was an astute analysis. Well, of all of the students that were interviewed on that day, there was one student whose observations were not broadcast. And those were the observations of my son. So even the idea of the media providing balanced views is a myth.
You know, you can often see sometimes when they spontaneously talk to people on the street, an expression comes over the face of the interviewer who realizes this guy is not saying what he anticipated he was going to say. This is the Taylor Report. We're speaking to Stephen Gowans. The you mentioned foreign affairs. Foreign affairs, that title on the piece that you had, I think it was kind of vulgar. He said Trump had it right on the Middle East. He was okay. There was another article, foreign affairs, which is, I was struck by, I want your thoughts about, because it seems to be, very struck. It was Samantha Powers, notorious regime change artist and advocate in the previous administration. And she was talking about what Biden is going to do. And she said the title of her piece was The Can-Do Country. That's America. The Can-Do Country. And this is Biden's opportunity. But the entire text of her article was what they're going to do with China, and I would say that's a shift from her previous persona, because when she came in last time she was a human rights fighter with an axe and spear, and they were going to change the backward authoritarian governments. But boy, she is zoned in on China. And I don't know, did you notice this? What is this obsession? And certainly it was Trump going out with as mean as you could approach it, but Biden coming in, they seem to be on the same page.
Yes, without question. And on everything, including China. I won't say especially China, but including China. Iran, too. I mean, just to quickly mention Iran, when we look at what the anticipated Biden policy on Iran is and on the JCPOA, I can't see that it's distinguishable in any respect from the Trump policy at all, which is... essentially, we'll join the JCPOA again, from which we withdrew, so long as Iran first brings itself back into compliance. Mm-hmm. And then we want to talk about other things like, ballistic missiles and other such things, which perhaps you could find some differences of nuance between the Obama and the Trump and the proposed Biden policy, but if there are differences, they are minuscule at best. But on China, I mean, there's a complete continuity going right back to Obama, when Obama, if we recall, talked about the pivot to China, which was essentially the beginning of this increasing pressure on China, or what some have called an all-out virtual war on every conceivable front, or has been called a hybrid war strategy of political, ideological, technological, financial intervention, and stepped up military pressures, all designed to slow down or even halt China's economic development, and then to bring it back into this undeclared US empire. But Biden himself, in an article in Foreign Affairs, had talked about how he was going to confront China. And how he was going to confront China was through human rights, although they acknowledged that the problem with China is it's challenging US economic supremacy. That's the problem. But how do you mobilize people to back this, you know, this virtual war on every conceivable front? Well, you do so by creating a black legend about China, about how it's, contravening or encroaching upon the human rights of these poor, long-suffering Chinese, and also demonizing the Chinese government, which is being done a lot by Pompeo, we know this. But even Biden has done this. People perhaps haven't forgotten, but Biden has taken to calling Xi a thug. So this is just, you know, a continuation of this demonization policy. And one perhaps very perceptive person in Foreign Affairs had said, one of the problems with demonizing China or demonizing any rival is once you demonize a rival, there's no going back. Because anytime you try to negotiate or compromise, that's called appeasement. So it's very dangerous.
And they've been making these
these extraordinary statements about China, about being a mortal enemy. This comes from George Soros. It's a mortal enemy. Why does George Soros believe that China is a mortal enemy? Well, because he says, you know, well, we encourage free trade and interaction with China. We thought this was going to be great because it would open up this closed country and was essentially make China, you know, the low wage manufacturing of the world. And it would be, you know, assume this lower rung on the world economic hierarchy, and that's where it would stay. But things haven't worked out that way. China's developed, China's rising, China's now challenging US economic supremacy, and therefore it has become a mortal enemy about which something must be done.
It really is a reflection, a bad one, on our alleged open and democratic society, where we sort things out and have a parliament. I noticed that in the document that you provided on your Twitter account, that the language is, it's very interesting, it's just like reading Chrystia Freeland. It says, our values and our national interests. And it talks about our strategic opponent without anybody saying, could we debate that? What is the evidence that this is somehow a threat to us, where they don't have a military? They never said they're going to blow us up. They never said they own part of our territory. They don't insist they have to come in and have a look at how things are going in Grassy Narrows and such things. But as you point out, you get the demonization process working, and they don't have to any longer reference that. They don't have to explain, how did we get to this point? It's understood, human rights violations. And you know, you mentioned Biden, you could throw in Bernie Sanders and AOC and her companions. They all agree on this point, right? I mean, they bought into demonization.
They have to, yes, genuinely.
I don't, what debate did we ever have? You know, China, after all, is in the United Nations. And on matter of record, they were our allies. We provided them with arms and aid, and they provided us with aid and manpower, and we fought a common enemy. So when did they become the bad guy? And when did we agree to on that?
No, I know. They became the bad guy in 1949. When the communists came to power, and then they became the good guy when Nixon went to China, and China decided that it was going to open up. But now that China has developed economically, and now that China has a plan and uses a state-directed development model, which I don't think the United States objects to a state-led development model, objects to Chinese state-led development challenging US state-led development. Because the United States and Wall Street complain a lot about state-led development in China and China's plans to become a global innovation leader in AI and robotics and aeronautics, et cetera. And they say, well, they can't do that because that's state-led, you know, it's a state-led model. But what they hide is the fact that the United States itself has a US state-led development model. In fact, Biden is pledging to establish a US state-led alliance on technology issues to develop 5G equipment to fill the void created by banning Huawei. And he's not going to challenge the ban of Huawei either. But the other interesting thing about Huawei is that the pretext for banning Huawei is that it'll be used by the Chinese government for espionage, which omits the reality that the NSA had already penetrated Huawei equipment with the intention of using it for espionage. This is something that was reported in the New York Times and was revealed by Edward Snowden. And then Biden's pledging to spend $300 billion on public funds on research and development of new products, $400 billion of US taxpayer money on infrastructure products. There are projects to use American products, and it goes on and on. I mean, both political parties are pushing for public funding of the US semiconductor industry to keep its edge over China. And then we have DARPA, which is the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, which has funneled public funds in the development of the internet and GPS and Siri and computer mouse, among other things. I mean, it's spending billions of dollars every year and has been doing so for decades on AI research. And the United States objects to China using a state-led model, which is trying to become a leader in innovation. Why? Because it's challenging the US leadership in innovation, which is publicly funded. So there's this great amount of hypocrisy in complaining about Chinese state-led economic development when the United States has its own state-led, publicly funded economic development program, which, however, takes publicly funded innovations and inventions and allows billionaires to profit off them. Like Elon Musk, for example, his SpaceX has received over $3 billion in US public funding.
Could you tell us what you identify? I keep referring to the document. What is this document that you posted? It's recently been, what was it, declassified, I guess, only in recent days, right?
Yeah, and I saw it was a tweet sent by Greg Ehlich, and he had a link to this, and I looked at it, and it said declassified document on the U.S. strategic framework for the Indo-Pacific, which seemed to be coming from the White House. So I regarded it with some skepticism initially, thinking, why would this document be recently declassified? So I did some digging and discovered that it was a legitimate document. And I expected the next day to read about this in some newspapers. Well, there was no mention of it, except I found one article in the Washington Post. And the Washington Post article was about, well, why had this document been declassified, rather than here are the contents and why is it that the United States is saying what it's saying in this document. But the document was the US strategic framework for the Indo-Pacific. And the reason was claimed it was declassified was to demonstrate that the Trump administration does have a policy on containing China. Because apparently some of the Biden people are saying, and others are saying, well, I don't think Trump had a policy. He was just, you know, flying by the seat of his pants. And so the point of declassifying this was to say, no, indeed, we had a policy, and this is what the policy is. So it spells out part of the policy. One document they couldn't declassify was called the U.S. Strategic Framework for Countering, this is wonderful, Chinese Economic Aggression. This is apparently competing with the United States, and the economic field amounts to aggression.
Starbucks and Second Cup. He's being aggressive. He's opened a store.
So the strategic framework document talked about how it was the United States is going to maintain what it called its strategic primacy in the Indo-Pacific region while preventing China from establishing any sphere of influence in the Indo-Pacific. And then it also said how was the United States going to maintain its U.S. global leadership against a challenge from China. And it talked about the ways in which it was doing that. One of them was to recruit India as a counterweight to China. The other was, it said...
I'm really glad you underlined that. Because this is such a revelation that... For people to understand, for a country to actually talk about aligning, using India, they use the term counterweight. I mean, Chinese on their side, and I should mention, it did come up at a foreign ministry yesterday. The foreign ministry's office was asked about that document. But mainly, it just shows how ruthless the U.S. is. I mean, to actually talk to one another, we're going to use India against China. I mean, if I was in New Delhi, I would begin to perspire because countries really don't like to be revealed to be instruments of great powers. This is very embarrassing. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
There's also, I find this interesting as well. There are some arguments that part of the strategy or the larger US strategy over the long term is to replace China as this low wage manufacturing center or place where US firms can have goods manufactured at low wages, to replace China with India and Mexico. And the renegotiated Canada, Mexico, US trade pact was part of that strategy. And some of the efforts to cultivate this relationship with India are also part of that strategy to move production from China to India and to Mexico. But this will be presented as offering benefits to people in North America, for example. As Trump had tried to argue in recruiting people into his campaign that he wanted to bring manufacturing back to the United States. There's no intention of bringing manufacturing back to the United States or Canada. The intention is to create a new low-wage manufacturing zones in Mexico and India. And in this document, they also talked about the establishment of propaganda apparatuses to create a black legend against China, to discredit China. But they call this educating or educational program. So they're going to educate governments, businesses, universities, Chinese overseas students, news media about what they call China's coercive behavior. And they talked about establishing a mechanism, presumably a propaganda mechanism that explains Chinese activities and the problems they pose to the interest, liberty, and sovereignty of nations. And then they also talked about countering China's One Belt, One Road initiative. And in fact, Congress had approved what they called the Build Act, which was a $60 billion development financing program to counter China's Belt and Road strategy in Africa and Asia.
Boy,
so this simply laid out the strategy that the Trump administration had been following. You could probably infer this from what they were doing, but it was interesting to see it actually written out.
Well, I think they're going to have to go to your site to learn more. Stephen, we're going to have to leave it there. This is the Taylor Report. By the way, Stephen has a great book, Washington's Long War on Syria. Please get a copy of that. Thank you very, very much for being on the Taylor Report.